Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. So welcome to the Dalmatian episode of Analytics Neat. I was in London last week, and I'm not sure if any of you followed the weather, but I had two winter storms that impacted my travel. The first one was Winter Storm Sierra, which delayed my arrival to London. The second was Winter Storm Dennis. Now, Dennis was a bomb cyclone. I don't know what that is, but what it resulted in was about 35 minutes of pure terror as the plane took off from Heathrow and made its way across the UK. People were screaming, people were grabbing the barf bags. The plane was all over the place. I was towards the back of the plane on this particular flight, and it felt like the tail was just constantly wagging. And it was awful, but made it safely, and glad that I'm here to be able to record another episode for all of you. So thanks for listening, and we're just grateful to be doing another episode. And you've probably picked up on the fact that my voice sounds a little bit different if you've been an avid neater, struggling with a little bit of a sore throat and whatnot. I'm, you know, just hoping it's not the corona. But let's go ahead and jump into today's topics. Got a few things for the undercard, and then a relatively amusing topic, at least from my perspective, for the main event. So first up on the undercard is Snowflake, and I'm not referring to the derogatory term in society today. I'm talking about the cloud-based data warehouse company. They, if you haven't noticed, did another massive round of funding. This one was for $479 million. That brings their total valuation to just about $12.5 billion with a B dollars. So that's triple the company's previous valuation from October 2018. And the CEO, Frank Slootman, suggested that they're likely going to go for an IPO next, which makes sense. I mean, you can't just keep raising this kind of money if you're getting bigger and bigger each time. What's interesting, though, for me is who the investors were. There was a new investor, Salesforce Ventures, and there was a variety of existing investors as well in the platform. And Snowflake now has relationships with AWS, with Microsoft Azure, with the Google Cloud Platform. No surprises there. Very common for there to be some general partnerships across all the cloud platforms as they continue to fight it out for who's going to win in the battle of cloud supremacy. And they also, though, brought in Salesforce. That's a nice win for them. There was even commentary across some of the articles that I read sort of speaking to their ability to manage Salesforce data. And so from that perspective, you know, they're lining up with all of the major important vendors, in my perspective, to make themselves relevant. I've come across Snowflake quite a bit over the years. They've always been spoken about in high regard with the clients that are using them. And, you know, there's that sort of ebb and flow between the traditional data warehousing vendors and the cloud-based vendors like Snowflake. And you're seeing embracing of the cloud even across the other vendors in the landscape, with folks like Teradata making some massive announcements around their cloud partnerships from last year's Teradata Universe in Denver. So it's a movement to the cloud. Snowflake has sort of perfected it, so to speak. They've been doing this for quite some time, and that is a massive valuation. And when you look at these types of valuations, it's always important to note that the existing investors did continue to put money in addition to gaining new investors. And so that just shows the kind of momentum that they're gaining in the space, and also speaks to the cloud data strategies that are being put together by today's enterprises and how important it is to be able to have an offering like that in the big data world that we live in. So on to the next topic. There's a new report from a company called Feedvisor. They surveyed more than 1,000 brands in the U.S. to figure out a little bit more about the performance of the Amazon advertising investments that they were making versus other platforms. And so they found that 73% of those that they surveyed now advertise on Amazon. That was up from 57% in the study the previous year. And while it's no secret that Amazon's advertising revenue is growing, which I'll come to a stat here in a moment, I think it is important to note that from the perspective of these 1,000 companies that were surveyed, that for those brands that are on Amazon, they found 59% of them, in fact, found that it was the channel that was driving the highest return on ad spend for them. 22% then listed Google with paid social behind it. And so from that perspective, it shows just how important brands are finding Amazon advertising to be. The report also found a 33% increase in the number of brands spending at least $40,000 US per month on the platform. And the average return that brands see on Amazon advertising, according to this study from Feedvisor, was, from a majority perspective, 40% of the respondents said they see 7x to 10x return, with another 36% in the 4 to 6x range. So when you look at that, you know, two-thirds of the responses, just over two-thirds, see anywhere from 4 to 10x return on investment. Now, from my perspective in reading this report, I am curious how this is being measured. I've often found flawed logic in the analysis when you're calculating things like return on ad spend, and a lot of that is due to the difficulty in measuring it. Now, obviously, if you're 100% online and only digital in nature, then that's easier. If you're only selling on Amazon, then that obviously becomes easier to measure as well. But I think the key stat to keep in mind here, if you're Facebook, Google, or really anyone else that's trying to compete with Amazon, is that that brings Amazon's company and annual advertising revenues in 2019 were at roughly $14.1 billion. That was up 39% from $10.1 billion in 2018. So they're not going away. Companies are believing that they're getting more return from Amazon. Whether or not they actually are compared to other channels remains to be seen. I think Amazon as a channel makes it a lot easier to measure. Obviously, it's retail-based, makes that even easier to measure returns as well. And it's not as nebulous as other environments like, say, FMCG or categories like that. Not to mention that from a convenience perspective, nothing gets easier than shopping on Amazon, and everyone adopts that practice. But that wraps up this week's undercard, and let's go ahead and jump into the main event. If you're an avid neater, in the archives a few weeks ago, there was an episode with Cookie Monster in the title, where I talked about Google's decision to block third-party cookies and all the uproar around that. And as you'd imagine, given all of the browser adjustments, the general disregard and blocking of third-party cookies because they're garbage, and even some of the restriction on JavaScript set cookies in the browser of a first-party nature, particularly from Apple's ITP, that you'd get a lot of vendors who are dependent upon JavaScript and dependent upon tagging and dependent upon third-party cookies in many ways to start writing thought posts about it or thought leadership posts to try to calm the user base for that are using their technology. And in my perspective, it's a lot of vendor deception, a lot of sleight of hand. You've seen folks like Adobe write blogs on a website called Medium.com. You've seen write-ups from Tealium over the last 6 to 8 months. You've seen write-ups from Google, so on and so forth. And all of them are trying to appease the customer base. And honestly, in my opinion, not being very forthright and not being realistic in how they should be responding to this and what consumers from a brand perspective should be thinking about when it comes to capturing digital data. So I thought it'd be fun to go through a few of the themes and kind of pick them apart a bit. One of the common themes is around getting permission from your consumers for data collection while improving the user experience around it. There's a lot of commentary around ensuring that you're being educational in terms of what opting in and opting out means and what it brings. Here's the reality, though. Consumers aren't going to read all of that. If they are skeptical and not loyal to the particular brand website that they're on, from my experience, they're going to opt out. Unfortunately, the industry's put a lot of scary commentary around this. The data breaches don't help. But consent is table stakes. If you don't have a consent management platform built into your data capture solution, then you are not a good steward of data. And you need to be able to do this on all channels, and you have to be able to propagate and persist those preferences across any other touch points where you might be capturing data. If you're not doing that, or if you're defaulting that to another system, a third-party system of some kind to do that on your behalf, then you are not fit for purpose for data management and data capture in today's world. Here's the real issue, though. Persisting with an expiring first-party cookie or a data layer does not ensure compliance on page one. So when you have someone set their preferences and you're trying to recall that later, the ability to recall that before the first page loads in time to stop capture on page one ain't gonna happen. So remember that as well, because these JavaScript-based tagging solutions that are reliant on data layers and subpar cookies set via JavaScript are not going to be able to do the recall instantly before that page loads to remember those opt-out preferences, and that becomes a problem. One of the second themes, and my personal favorite because of the dumpster fire of a recommendation that it is to increase authentication on your property. Now, I don't know how long those of you that are listening have been in the industry. I've been in it for quite some time, and I remember when this was a joke back in the mid-2000s, because vendors actually recommended this back then. They were like, oh, you want to be able to know who people are so you can start doing A/B multivariate testing? Throw a login page on the front of your content. You know, gate it. That'll help. And all that does is piss people off, honestly. And so to have a response as a vendor who's trying to not admit that their data capture is subpar and to say that you need to increase authentication on your properties, that's just not a good recommendation. From a customer experience standpoint, unless there's a reason to have gated content, you can't just start throwing logins along the way. That's just going to make it horrible for your consumers, and that's just an unbelievable recommendation to see from vendors as something that could be a potential workaround for the fact that they can't capture the individual. One of the recommendations that does pop up quite a bit is around data sharing and partnering with brands more closely to get more enriched first and second party data. You see this quite a bit. That I agree with. I mean, third party data is gone. You need to look for partnerships, but you do have to be careful and make sure that your privacy policies are up to date, that your data sharing clearly is, clearly outlined for your consumers, and that it's all above board. I would also recommend that if you're going to be sharing your first party data, whether that's through a media agency or some other partner, make sure that your contracts are clear in terms of how that data is going to be used, the extent of it, and make sure that it's not going to be shared without your knowledge downstream or used elsewhere to make more money. Here's another fun theme that I've seen from the vendors, and it's around diversifying your footprint and engaging your consumers beyond the browser. Naturally, if you can't capture the browser, you struggle with mobile, you're going to say, go do something else. That's how I read that one. It's like, well, we can't fix this problem, so why don't you go try to do something else with your consumers, even if you're just a digital-first company. What a great recommendation that is. And it's right up there with moving to a single domain strategy and away from subdomains. Now, obviously, the push here from a vendor perspective is the majority of tag-based vendors have to switch to a third-party cookie to share between different domains and then turn that back into a first-party cookie. There's a lot of restrictions from the browsers now on cross-domain tracking as well. And some of the DNS tricks that have been deployed by a lot of the digital analytics solutions using things like CNAMEs are not fit for purpose and can't get the workarounds in all cases to the changes that the browsers have made. So I think from that perspective, if you can't just restructure all of your websites as a brand. Sure, maybe you could do that downstream, but it just doesn't work like that. It's not realistic. It's kind of like the login recommendation that I mentioned earlier. And I think that the brands have to do better. But more importantly, I think that the consumers and the purchasers of these technologies from a brand perspective need to do better as well. Need to think a bit more about whether or not these data sets, these tag-based vendors, are really fit for purpose for data across the enterprise, and whether or not the challenges that are happening in the industry are a sign of things to come, and whether or not you're getting the real return on investment from a data capture perspective for the vendors that you're paying for. And that, I think, is where I'm going to leave it today. Hopefully this was something to think about. I'd welcome your thoughts, and I challenge everyone to think differently. Reporting, personalization, data science, fraud, risk, compliance. When you start thinking about all the challenges that we've been talking about and the data required to fulfill all of those different options that I just mentioned, you start to realize that a data set designed for reporting first is not necessarily fit for purpose across all of those. And that's where I'll leave you guys today. But with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this week's episode of Analytics Neat. Thank you again so much for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe if you get the opportunity. I do publish this on BillBruno.com, but it is available on all major podcast platforms. If it's not somewhere where you need it to be, let me know. And we'll be back again next week with another new episode. And until then, I hope you have a fantastic week.